Good morning, everyone. I'd like to, before we begin, thank SIU Law School and Dean Davidson for hosting us here this morning for oral arguments. You have our gratitude. We're very happy to be here, and thank you for being such gracious hosts. Before we begin this morning, I would also like to remind everyone about the federal court's policy against broadcasting. There is no photography and no broadcasting of any kind allowed in the court proceeding today. We will take one photo for posterity before we begin so that we can record this event both for the law school and for the court. All right, and with that, I'll call this morning's first case for argument, and it is Christine Simmons versus J.B. Pritzker. Ms. Shipp.
Good morning. May it please the court. Carissa Shipley here on behalf of Christine Simmons. As I'm sure the court knows, this is a case regarding the property rights of disabled children. The district court saw fit to dismiss our case based on mootness, which was in error. The other major issue within this case relates to the exhaustion requirement for administrative remedies for children under the IDEA. There are a few other smaller issues, but I believe that the biggest issues here are those mootness and exhaustion arguments. The court erred when it dismissed our case for mootness based on the fact that the children's property rights to a free, appropriate public education were, there was a complete issue with those rights. Under
before we go too far down that road, I want to confirm something. TS is the only remaining plaintiff in the case, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And TS's parent, Christine Simmons, who also brings the case individually.
Okay, so it's, but the case was brought by Ms. Simmons, not by TS, correct?
It was brought by Ms. Simmons individually and on behalf of TS.
On behalf of, so yes. He's over 18, correct?
Yes.
And he's graduated.
That's correct.
Has he redelegated his rights under the IDEA?
No.
How can she represent? How she was
So she has standing under her own rights as a parent under Winkleman versus Parma. So,
how does she have standing for any kind of injunctive that is sought here, which would be relief in terms of the education?
So she doesn't have standing for prospective relief. We believe she has standing for retrospective relief.
So most of your claims are prospective. Do you agree, since she doesn't have standing, that you can't continue to pursue those claims?
Yes, on her individually, we did ask for a class certification, and this was prior to when TS graduated.
How would she be an adequate class representative if she doesn't stand there to pursue those claims?
At the time the case was filed, she did have standing to pursue those claims.
But she doesn't now.
That's correct.
So you agree then that the only claims, because there was never a class that was certified, it's just the individual claims of TS. The only claims that are before us today are for any kind of retroactive relief?
Yes.
In what form?
Nominal damages.
Under what statute or law?
Under the Uzagbanom case.
I'm sorry, what statute or law? Nominal damages under?
No, that would be under the Americans with Disabilities Act and our 504 claims.
Those are coextensive with the IDEA. Those don't confer greater rights, and certainly not on the mother.
Right. They do confer greater remedies, though, even though it is a fateful.
But the remedies run to the student, not the parent.
The parent also has separate distinguishable rights.
To vindicate the child's rights?
Yes, because
it's derivative then. And we back into the problem that Judge Saini was mentioning about the student being over 18 and not delegating his rights to his mother?
Yes, the parents' rights had a complete, the parents' rights were also violated. So the parent under the IDEA and other laws, it continues to have a right to participate in the due process portion of the IDEA, and that was also violated.
But there's no damages remedy for that.
So that would just be the nominal damages. And under the Uzegnam case, I believe it was Justice Kagan who was actually summarizing Taylor Swift, that $1 of nominal damages does represent something. So when there's a complete violation of a right, asking for a dollar might seem minimal, but it does represent something.
No, I understand the principle of nominal damages. The problem here is that your client, the mom, had strictly derivative claims. She was vindicating the rights of her son, not her own rights. And so to the extent that the son is now no longer a student and he's over 18 and has not delegated his rights to her, she doesn't have standing to advance them either for injunctive relief or for any form of compensatory retrospective damages, whether nominal or otherwise.
Well, I believe that she does have rights that are separate from her son's, while they may come from his denial of a FAPE. The IDEA is also very parent-centric. It's not just student-centric. So she had the right to advocate for her child in a due process hearing, and that right was...
Well, she didn't invoke those rights, though. That overlaps into the exhaustion problem here, but there was never any attempt to exercise administrative remedies under the IDEA by asking for review of Governor Pritzker's shutdown order and the extent to which it was impacting her child's education.
Right. And we do believe that exhaustion in that case, that those requests would have been futile in the administrative state.
I understand that's your argument about the exhaustion requirement. My point is really more fundamental to that. It's that she did not invoke her right to a due process administrative review on behalf of her son. So there can be no due process concern here.
So she actually did file three separate due process complaints, but she didn't complete and exhaust the administrative process. Right. Yes, I understand. And maybe she should have gone through that issue, but we don't think that she needed to exhaust. Based on the fact that she was denied the notice requirement, she was denied notice that her child was getting a change of placement.
Let me ask you this. As I understand it then, at this point, you are no longer pursuing the compensatory education or compensatory relief damages on behalf of the child, is that correct?
Yes, the child has graduated and he is no longer a minor.
Okay, so we can take that off the table.
Yes.
So the only thing to pursue are any kind of damages that the parent, that the mother might be entitled to.
Yeah.
To the extent she is.
Yes, that's correct.
And you said, I believe it was your motion to dismiss, in your response to the motion to dismiss, that you were not seeking any monetary damages against the defendants. Have you waived that right to nominal damages?
No, I don't believe we have. We have that in the complaint, that in several places that we're requesting nominal damages.
Would you agree that the mother, Ms. Simmons, cannot pursue the RICO claim on behalf of her son either?
I think that the RICO claim was based more on a class action and less on Ms. Simmons alone.
But she still has to have standing to bring it. and now that her son is over 18, how can she continue to represent him for purposes of the RICO claim? Because the RICO claim wasn't pled as if they were her rights. It was pled that she was bringing it on.
And I think that, again, her own separate rights give her standing to pursue the RICO claim based on the fact that she was denied notice of the change of placement.
So you agree that she is can no longer represent TS to the extent she's pursuing TS's rights, given that he's over 18?
Yes.
And she hasn't been appointed by a court in any kind of representative capacity. So the only RICO claim, to the extent you pled it and it exists, would be her own rights.
That's correct.
You can proceed.
Thank you. I believe we touched just a bit on the exhaustion claim, so I'd like to address that as well. This case was, their initial brief was filed last January, and in the interim, the Supreme Court decided Perez versus Sturgis, and that case essentially excused exhaustion when a remedy was requested that wasn't available under the IDEA. So our request for nominal damages, I believe that the Sturgis case should now apply to this case, and that it should be, this case should be remanded based on the fact that it was dismissed for exhaustion prior to Sturgis being determined.
If I could get some further clarification on the source of law that you're relying on for this claim that your client, the mother, has for nominal damages. It's not a claim for nominal damages for violation of the IDEA.
No, it's...
Because there's no nominal damages under the IDEA.
That's correct.
So it's nominal damages for violation of her rights under what statute or constitutional provision under 1983?
So under the ADA and 504.
But... She's not disabled. She's vindicating her son's rights.
Yes.
And this is not a discrimination claim. And that's what those two statutes address.
So we do think that there was...
She's not being discriminated against, and her client, her son, is not being discriminated against. It was a... an across-the-board shutdown order that the governor issued that closed all schools for all students and families across the entire state.
But through that shutdown and through moving to virtual learning, special education students were denied the support services that they needed. So whereas you might have an average child who can learn virtually, a special education student has those additional services that they have a right to that weren't able to be provided virtually. And that denied them access to education. So while they could perhaps sit in front of a computer and watch a lesson, they don't have the same ability to appreciate what's being taught.
How is that explained? Talking about rights of students deprivation
Sorry, I think we conceded that we couldn't bring it on behalf of the student because
on behalf of the student, yes. Under the IDEA, or the mother, to the extent you're seeking nominal damages, because nominal damages aren't allowed.
Yes, so the ADA and 504 claims that we're bringing, as the mother of that student, we believe that her rights were discriminated against because she had the right to be contacted by the school. She had the right for the school to say, we're moving to virtual learning. How can we make this work for your student? Is this working for your student? And she had the right to consider the change of placement and advocate for her child. Right. At the time the case was brought, she held the student's rights.
Right, but we've covered this. He's no longer a student, right, and he's over the age of 18, and he did not delegate his rights under any of these statutes to her. So she's got nothing left. Sorry, I interrupted.
I mean, I'm getting to the same question, which is, so it sounds like your theory is that the mother was discriminated against because she had a child with a disability. And I'm wondering whether you have any authority, statutory or otherwise, that recognizes a derivative discrimination claim like the one you quote.
No, I don't believe we have any authority for a derivative discrimination claim.
I think you wanted to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, that's right.
All right, you're into your rebuttal time, so
thank you.
Perhaps this is a good time to wrap up.
Okay. Yes, I'll reserve the 5 minutes.
Thank you. Ms. Janik.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Assistant Attorney General Lee Jonig for the state defendants. Based on the appellant's presentation, my understanding is that the only remaining claims in this case are a request for nominal damages by the parent, Christine Simmons, based on alleged violations of the ADA and Rehabilitation Act. So I'm going to focus my presentation on those issues unless the court has any questions about the district court's ruling on mootness with respect to the claims for prospective relief.
Just to include in there, for the case of the Shipley that indicated, she thinks there's also a RICO claim.
Yes, thank you. I will also address the RICO claim. And then counsel for the Ottawa defendants will then address any issues or questions that the court has specific to those defendants. So to start with this question, this remaining request for nominal damages, there's a very simple way for the court to resolve that request, which is that the plaintiffs abandoned their request for nominal damages, which we explain on pages 40 to 41 of our brief, and they do not respond to that in their reply that the fact that they in the district court conceded that they were not seeking any form of damages. And even if the court were to set that aside, nominal damages are not available under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which my understanding, based on the appellant's presentation, is that the only basis for the parent to have a claim for nominal damages is based on a lack of notice and other sort of statutory rights that are created specifically by the Education Act. So to the extent that the plaintiff is seeking nominal damages based on that, they're not available. And then to the extent that they're seeking nominal damages based on alleged violations of the ADA and Rehabilitation Act. There's no allegations in the complaint that the parent was discriminated against in any fashion. And so that's another way that this court can resolve the request for nominal damages. So for those sort of two independent bases for the court to rule on that, the court doesn't need to reach this issue of Luna Perez and whether the claim is seeking relief for that's not available under the Education Act.
How do you respond to Ms. Shipley's argument that the parents are seeking nominal damages for due process rights, inability to get proper notice, be able to add.
So those are rights that are created by the Education Act, the IDEA, and the IDEA plainly does not allow any plaintiff to recover any form of damages. It allows other types of remedies, which are no longer being sought here, like prospective relief, injunctive relief, declaratory relief, or even compensatory education. But now it appears that plaintiffs have abandoned those claims for, you know, those other types of relief. So nominal damages for any rights that are created by the Education Act are not available. And, you know, if plaintiffs were seeking these other forms of relief, their claim would have been properly dismissed because of lack of exhaustion, as the district court held. But unless the court has any questions on that, my understanding is the plaintiffs have abandoned that claim. So with respect to the RICO claim, the plaintiffs contend that a free appropriate public education is effectively a property right. We explain in our brief why that is not the type of injury that can be compensated for under RICO. But in any event, it's not a right, even if it were sort of theoretically a right that the student had that could, you know, give rise to a RICO claim. It's not a right that the parent has. There's no authority that I'm aware of or that plaintiffs have cited that suggests that, you know, a parent has a property right to their child's education such that, you know, the alleged interference with that right generates a RICO violation. The plaintiff's RICO claim is effectively trying to, you know, get around the exhaustion requirement by, you know, sort of dressing up their claim for the alleged deprivation of an education as a RICO claim. And it fails for a number of reasons, all of which we laid out in our brief. Unless the court has any further questions about that, we would rest on our brief on the remaining issues.
Thank you. Mr. Bernard.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Eric Bernard, and I represent the District 140 defendants here. And I just want to take a few moments to address some specific issues that pertain directly to District 140 and perhaps not to the to the state defendants. And in particular, I'll begin with mootness. Since the filing of this lawsuit, as we indicated in our brief, TS has graduated. And based on this court's holding in Board of Education versus Nathan R. and your requests for injunctive or declaratory relief pertaining to the provision of special education services have been mooted as a result of the plaintiff's graduation here. Furthermore, based on opposing counsel's concession here, they're no longer seeking any type of compensatory education services, which takes that off the table. And so ultimately, when you look at the facts that have occurred in terms of the graduation, we believe that moots the case. I'd also point out that there's no reasonable expectation that District 140 will return to remote learning in any capacity. In particular, I'll direct the court's attention to Section 10-30 of the Illinois School Code. That's a provision that was passed in June 2020, I believe, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and it provides that remote learning can only be implemented if two things are present. First, there must be a public health disaster declaration in effect, and second, the state superintendent must authorize the schools to use and implement remote learning. Governor Pritzker's disaster declaration expired earlier this year. As a result, neither the state superintendent nor District 140 has any authority to enter into an extended period of remote learning, notwithstanding the fact that they've been fully in person for two complete school years, as well as the current term as well. And so when you consider the amount of time they've been in full in-person learning and their statutory inability to enter into remote learning, once again, we believe that makes the matter moot. With respect to, even if this court determined that This case was not moot. We still believe that plaintiff's claims should be dismissed for failure to exhaust administrative remedies. I believe we've extensively briefed that issue, but to the extent the court has any questions, I'm of course happy to answer any. I guess the final argument I would say is even if the court believed that exhaustion was not required, we believe, as we set forth in our brief, that plaintiffs have failed to state a claim on all of their counts, and dismissal will be warranted for that reason as well. And so unless the court has any questions, I will leave it there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Shipley.
Thank you, Your Honor. We're asking the court to remand this case back to district court for error made by determining that the case is moot. The violation of the parent's rights was a complete violation to which she's entitled redress. Also to remand on the issue of exhaustion given the holding in Perez. I'll also quickly address the RICO violation. The parent does have a property right to the child's education that exists through the child, but that also exists in the parent's inherent desire to have an appropriate education for their child. And when the school district drops the ball on that, the parent is often put in the position to pick it up. Mr. Bernard touched on the merits of the case, but the merits of the case were not determined at the district court level. It was dismissed due to the unmootness and exhaustion issues. And so plaintiff respectfully asks this court to remand.
Thank you very much. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We'll move to our second case this morning.